It has been, I've been thinking about how it is easy to be primarily concerned with ourselves. The truth is, we're usually more than concerned with ourselves. We're often we're often consumed with ourselves, with our own needs, our own preferences, our own rights, our own comforts. What are some of the signs that you are tilting towards being consumed with yourself? Well, you feel imposed upon whenever you don't get what you want, right? Another sign might be, in many situations, you feel entitled to being comfortable. I mean, it's just expected. You feel entitled to it. Maybe you feel personally disrespected when you come to a four-way stop and one of the other cars goes out of turn. Like, it's a personal insult. Like, they premeditatively planned to, abuse you in that sense. This is just the way it is for most of us, I think, most of the time. We are primarily concerned with ourselves. We are even consumed with ourselves. Now, I realize that this isn't everybody, and I'm aware that this is not all of us all of the time. Some of you are in very difficult situations that you're right in the middle of right now. Some of you are navigating unfair treatment at work. Some of you are in the battle of your life. You're just trying to make it through the day. You are not being selfish. You're trying to survive. Okay. Others of you are caring for people with almost constant needs, whether it's a whole tribe of little kids, and you don't have a minute to think, or there's somebody in your family who's sick, and you're taking care of them. It would be totally inaccurate to characterize your day as it's all about you. I understand that. So there are clearly exceptions to this. But most of us, most of the time, this is just a function of our culture. We have been trained to be consumers. We expect to get what we want. We actually believe we deserve it most of the time. And truthfully, friends, this is just one of the reasons why following Jesus is so difficult for us. Because both by nature and by nurture, we are selfish. I came out, I was born selfish by nature, wanted it my way, and I have been nurtured in a culture which by and large has taught me I should get it my way. It is kind of about me at the end of the day. I would suggest that one of the reasons that we feel that this time in which we're living is so confusing is because the public narratives are dominated by an obsession with self. It's all about me. What do I want? And how do I want it? How many books, I wonder, do we need about self-care? Right? I mean, how many personality type tests do we need to take in order to better understand ourselves? How many conversations do we need about how we identify or our personal preferences or what we want to get out of life? We ask 12-year-olds, what do you want to get out of life? That's one of the most difficult questions for you to answer at any age. And we're leaning in on these kids. It's all about you. You can be all you want, anything you want. What do you want out of life? They're like, point me in a direction, please. Right. Have you noticed how easy it is to be disappointed when you're consumed with everything going your way? Like sometimes this happens on your birthday. We want everything to go, you set the diet, the meals, the plan for the day. It's your birthday. It's all about, you notice how easy it is to get disappointed on your birthday when something doesn't go exactly as planned? Have you ever met a crabby bride? Have you noticed how easy it is to feel offended when you believe you are entitled to being first in line, but you're not first in line? Or have you ever noticed how easy it is to feel offended when you think you should be applauded, but nobody's applauding? Nobody's even really noticing. Have you noticed yourself growing uncommonly angry or resentful or defensive when your idea for the solution to the problem isn't embraced? If you feel like you can resonate with any of that, you say yes to any of that, I don't think you're alone, because I think most of us, most of the time, are wrestling with some level of disappointment, some level of feeling offended. I think most of us feel defensive a lot of the time these days. And in part, it's because we have been fed this message that it is all about us for a long, long time. Now, I wasn't there, but what I read about my grandfather's generation, those who came to age in the early 1940s, due largely to the fact that there was a world war going on, is that personal sacrifice, not individual entitlement, was just a concept that was more familiar generally with the culture. Sacrifice is suffering for the sake of another. Sacrifice is placing a higher value on giving something up for the good of another. As in, I don't get what I want, and it's not the worst thing ever, because I'm valuing somebody else above myself. A few years ago, I got to read my grandfather's journals that he kept while he was in the Navy, while he was in World War II. And it seemed that he was living in a time, based on his observations about my grandmother, the sacrifices she was making, his peers, the journal just sort of bubbled with this general ethic of self-sacrifice. He seemed like he was living in a time of self-sacrifice. I feel like I'm living in a time of personal comfort. I'm certainly not arguing that no one in my grandparents' generation was selfish. In fact, I think you can make a good case for the claim that those after they sacrificed in World War II, those were some of the people that pioneered a whole new level of entitlement to personal comfort. You know, who knows? Maybe they felt like it was what they deserved after they gave so much, and they did give so much. I'm simply trying to set the table this morning, friends, with this. The idea, and more importantly, the practice of sacrificing for others, of living sacrificially, it just feels like it's losing ground. Feels like it's falling out of favor. Feels like it's less common, increasingly rare. Whereas we once had many cultural examples of sacrifice to point to, we have very few today. One author I read this last week said that the only example of sacrifice he could point to in his day-to-day life was cut flowers, which I just thought was sort of ridiculous. Where are we talking about this in church? Because the Christian faith is predicated on sacrifice. Specifically, the innocent willingly suffers for the guilty. What is the central image of Christianity? It's the cross, right? Where this symbolizes the ultimate sacrifice, where the innocent died for the guilty. And the innocent was just not some random person, but he was Jesus Christ, who Christians believed is the Son of God. So if you put all of the world's religions in a room and you said, let's talk about sacrifice, everybody in that room would talk about sacrifice in terms of what God demands of people, except Christianity. Christianity would talk about sacrifice primarily as something that God does for the people. All other religions understand sacrifice primarily as what we do for God. Christianity understands sacrifice primarily in terms of what God did for us. John writes, "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son." Now, we are called to sacrifice. We are called to sacrifice. But the sacrifices that we are called to are really a response to God's sacrifice for us. So today is part 3 of a new series called Clarifying Words for Confusing Times. And the clarifying word that I'm inviting us to consider this morning is the word sacrifice. In this confusing time, I think it's made even more confusing by this rabid obsession with self-fulfillment. Christianity invites, and frankly, Christianity confronts us with a different way of life. And it is a way of life that's marked by sacrifice. It is a way of living characterized by sacrificing. This is the radical phrase. This is the radical phrase, I believe it's coined by Paul in chapter 12 of his letter to the Christians in Rome. It's called Romans. Paul spends the first two-thirds of the letter, 11 whole chapters, talking about the nature of God, the nature of humanity, articulating doctrine. And then in the last third, beginning with the first verse of chapter 12, he pushes it towards the practical, towards the moral. Here's how it goes. And then he uses this two-word phrase. I think if Paul would have written a book, this would have been a great title for the book. Here's the phrase. It's this paradoxical mashup of two things that don't usually go together. Living sacrifice. That's his phrase. Living sacrifice. Comes from the 12th chapter of Romans. He writes this. Therefore, after 11 chapters of this is who God is, this is what God's done, this is who we are, this is about our need for God. Therefore, I urge you, brothers and sisters, in view of God's mercy, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. A living sacrifice, holy and pleasing to God. This is your true and proper worship. Now, what makes this word, this phrase, living sacrifice, radical? What is so unusual about this phrase? It's that sacrifices are dead, traditionally, right? In all world religions, it is, by definition, if it's a sacrifice, it's dead. But Christianity teaches that because Jesus was God in the flesh, because Jesus was God incarnate, this is what we talked about last week, his death on the cross accomplishes forgiveness, not just for the sins of one person, but for all sins of all people of all time. And so this ritualistic sacrifice, which needed to be repeated over and over again, of offering a lamb, offering a goat, offering a couple of pigeons if you're poor, which happened in the Jewish faith, obsolete, no longer needed because of the death and the resurrection of Christ. After the death and the resurrection of Christ, Christians are called to sacrifice, but the call is different now. It's to live sacrificially. It's to be a living sacrifice. Not to, you know, carry some poor virgin to the top of the volcano and throw her in to appease the angry gods, right? Not to, like, offer your firstborn to some, you know, corn god so that you have a good crop the next fall or whatever. No, it's totally different. It's totally different. God has sacrificed for us. So what is left for us to do? Paul writes, in view of God's mercy... In view of God's mercy, offer your bodies as a living sacrifice. So here's the message this morning. Jesus has given his life for us so that we can be free to live for others. Jesus has given his life for us so that we can be free to give our lives for others. The word sacrifice, I think, could be a very clarifying word for us, especially if we understand sacrifice in a distinctly Christian way, as something that we do willingly. It's not coerced. It's not forced. It's a willing sacrifice, and it's something that we do for others. It's not about us. It's a way of living that is oriented to the other. I don't hear a lot of people talking about sacrifice today. I don't hear a lot of people talking about living in a way that is sacrificial. Willingly giving up of their own stuff or time in order to serve somebody else. I do see a lot of people talking about what they want, what we want, what they deserve, and it is confusing. It feels like it would not be confusing, doesn't it? It feels like it would be enabling, but it's disorienting. It's confusing, like walking into Costco after you've been in a third world country for 2 weeks. It's disorienting. It's like, wait a minute, I don't even know where to start, right? Consumerism feels like I can have anything I want. That's confusing. Next week, we had a group of students and some of our staff that went to South Africa. They just got home like 36 hours ago. They're going to share next week. And I'm interested, they're going to share on the topic of poverty, and I'm interested to hear how sacrifice becomes a clarifying thing, and how consumerism potentially gets sort of diminished in importance. And I'm sure they have a whole lot of good stuff to share with us next week. This is clarifying to me. As a Christian, What role do I play on the baseball diamond? What role do I play in the city, in the conversations about economic development? What role to, this is clarifying. I'm a living sacrifice. That's what I'm called to do. My role is to be a presence that is willingly sacrificing for the sake of another. Sacrificing what specifically? Paul uses the word body. I would say essentially he's talking about your real life. Okay, your real life. All right, I'm going to share a powerful example and ask two questions, okay? In the 1980s, there was a well-known and widely respected Christian leader. His name was Robertson McQuilkin. McQuilkin was the president of Columbia Bible College and their seminary. He had a big radio ministry. By all measurements, Robertson McQuilkin was on the rise. His influence had momentum. He was gaining more and more influence all of the time. He was making a bigger difference more and more each year. And then in 1990, he resigned as president of Columbia Bible College and the seminary in order to care for his wife, Muriel, who was in the throes of Alzheimer's. I was in high school at the time, but I was introduced to this story because it was an issue that created no small amount of controversy among Christian leaders, because some believed and were very open about sharing their opinion that McQuilkin was making the wrong decision, that his influence in the United States was so positive and important and that it was gaining speed that it was irresponsible for him to step out of that role of leadership. Weren't there other people who could help care for his wife? Wasn't there some sort of a professional facility who could do a better job caring for his wife? But McQuilkin was resolute, and he announced his resignation on his radio show, which was heard by tens of thousands of people, and then that recording went viral before that was even a thing, before the internet existed, right? Or maybe it did, but nobody had it in 1990. You can still hear his resignation speech. If you look it up, Robertson McQuilkin, this is essentially what he says. He explains that his wife had become increasingly anxious, terrified, and confused when she was away from him. But when he was with her, she was calm and peaceful. And he explained that he had promised at their wedding to care for her in sickness and in health. She had supported him during his multi-decade-long ministry already. He said it was a privilege to care for her, and he resigned. He later wrote and wondered in his writings why the Lord had removed him from this position of influence at what appeared to be the height of his ministry. And he remembered a night when he battled the questions in his mind, like he was really struggling with it. And what specifically, he was struggling with what might have been. And now I'm going to quote from his book. He says, "The next day, we," that is Muriel and himself, "we went for our walk around the block. I'd have to hold her hand to balance her. I heard the shuffling behind me, and I looked back, and here's this disheveled homeless man. And he just looks at us. He looks at us up and down. And then he said, 'That's good. That's real good. I like that. Yeah, that's good.' And then he turned around and shuffled away." And McQuilkin says, "I just chuckled. And then we got back to the garden, and all of a sudden it hit me. Lord, could you speak to me through a half-inebriated voice of an old vagabond? You did. And if you say it's good, that's all I needed to hear." So, he says, "I had that assurance all along that this was my assignment and it was pleasing to him." I love this story because it is a powerful example of sacrifice that is embraced as a good thing, as a way of living. And I also love this story because it challenges the false idea that suffering is the worst thing that can happen to you, and it should be avoided at all costs. Why would you ever choose to suffer? Why would you ever choose to suffer with somebody else? McQuilkin willingly gives up his position of influence, his calling as he had understood it for 40 years, The work that was his passion, his public leadership, he walks away from all of it in order to keep the promise he made to his wife on their wedding day. What was that promise? To share in her suffering, to willingly suffer for another. He sacrificed being a well-known public leader of thousands of people in order to live out his Christian faith, serving one person who most days didn't know who he was, in relative obscurity for the next 13 years. I love this story, and I'm deeply challenged by this story because it demonstrates that living sacrificially cannot happen in theory. It can only happen in practice. It must take the form of action. Now, you and I are aware of more needs than we can help with, right? We can't all respond to every need, but I want to challenge us to look at our lives. That's too big. Look at this season of your life. That might feel too big. Let's look at, we're rounding the corner of coming out of summer. Let's look at the next few months. Okay. I've already got some dates in mind, some things that are planned already. And let's simply ask ourselves, where am I sacrificing for others? How am I living sacrificially? And I get it, there's a limit to our time and there's a limit to our money. But I also know that responding to a need with the excuse, I'd love to help, but, is, to be frank, often rooted in prioritizing personal comfort above this value of living sacrificially for others. And choosing personal comfort almost always reveals this unattractive reality that we are primarily concerned with ourselves. We might even be consumed with our needs, our wants. We are unable, maybe better stated, we are unwilling to sacrifice for others. Let me be really clear. You are the most sacrificial and giving people I know. You are. And I know that most of you are not just giving out of what's left over. I know that you're giving sacrificially, and I honor you for that. I honor you for that. And as Christians, that is as it should be, right? In view of God's mercy on us, how can we not live sacrificially? It's a great tragedy when those who have been given so much forget and begin instead to feel entitled. Who would ever do that? Well, the Jews did, and Christians have during seasons of life or seasons of history, and we will too if we forget. And if we begin to become entitled and unwilling to live sacrificially, which will happen if we allow ourselves to kind of get carried along in the current of our culture because we're being trained in this direction by the culture. Two quick questions to wrap up. And I just want to push this to the very practical. I hope to challenge and comfort. I feel like we're trying to cut a delicate line here. Not trying to beat anybody up. I am trying to challenge all of us to be Christian, to live in a way that reflects what Paul is talking about here. Two quick questions. First, are you giving sacrificially? Are you consciously going without in order to help another? Friends, let me just be transparent. I've given at least 10% of my income to the church for so long it has become a habit. It's literally automatic in my case. It's just an automatic thing that happens. I don't think about it. And there's some real health to that. I know that that's not all bad. That's a good habit to have. 6 months ago, I increased the amount of money I'm giving because I felt like it needed to be a gift. I felt like it needed to be, I needed to feel it. And then the price of everything went up, and I'm feeling it, right? The point isn't the amount of the gift. The point is that it's that we're called to make it a gift. If you have 32 pairs of shoes and somebody says, can I have one? You're like, sure. If you have two pairs of shoes and somebody needs one, that's a gift. Because you're consciously sacrificing something that is valuable to you in order to give it to somebody else. I think it's just practical. This finances are practical. That's why they're so powerful. Finances reveal what we value. That's why it's so important. It's where the battle rages for many of us, is when it hits the finances. It's as practical as we get. Do I prioritize comfort or do I prioritize sacrifice? Which value informs the stewardship of my resources? Personal comfort or living sacrificially? First question, are you giving sacrificially? And yes, we're talking about in terms of your money. Second question, are you living sacrificially in terms of how you spend your time? Increasingly, friends, time is more and more valuable to me, and it's not just because it's limited, it's because of the fact that it's so valuable. Time is so valuable. It is costly to the one who gives it, and it is meaningful to the one who receives it. Time is super, super valuable. Every once in a while, somebody will pitch something to me, and they'll say, in your free time, and I'm like, hold on, who has free time? If we serve others in our free time, A, it's almost never going to happen, and B, is it really serving them? Is it really costing us anything? We are not talking about starting a hobby. Okay? We're talking about living sacrificially. That's what we're talking about. So let's not confuse the two. I had a lunch with a member of our community this last week, and I thanked him for volunteering so consistently at church, and he stopped me, and he said, I don't like that word, volunteering. He's like, this is my community. I'm here to serve God here. This is good for me. This is important to me. This is valuable to me. I have grown here. And he launched into like this 10-minute speech about how important his involvement here was and how meaningful it was and how he'd grown and changed over the years. And I'm thinking, this guy is sacrificing his time. And he's alive. He's more alive than he's been ever. He's a living sacrifice. He's living out that crazy paradox. He's not dead. He's not begrudgingly, oh, whatever. Living sacrifice. Two questions. And I just think asking ourselves these questions a couple times a year is just healthy. It's just a good checkup. Are you giving sacrificially in terms of your money? Are you living sacrificially in terms of how you spend your time? On the backside of your notes, just a couple of practical possibilities within the context of this church. If you're like, I need an idea, point me in a direction. You could serve in the kids' classes that happen upstairs every Sunday. This is critical, critically important that we disciple our children to love Jesus. You can teach, you can support, you can help check them in. It's a really important role. You could help prep and serve food on Sundays. That's about hospitality. That's about making this a welcoming place. It's so awkward to go into a room sometimes if you're new and there's nothing to do. Well, go get a muffin and a cup of coffee. It literally helps it just feel warmer. That's what that's about. That's making a huge difference in the culture of this church. You could help with food. You could come early and welcome people to church. You could be the face of grace and welcome. You could be the first impression that is an embracing first impression. Most people who are visiting Emmaus make their decision about whether or not they feel connected here way before anything happens on this platform. It happens with the greeters in the front. There's an usher training August 14th. If you want to come early and welcome people. You can set up a regular contribution to Emmaus. There's a QR code on your notes right there. You could increase your regular contribution to Emmaus. Let's go out a circle. You could become a monthly supporter of the Foundry Youth Center. This is a youth center in town that we support. It's our youth center. We run it. You could give an hour a week hanging out with kids there. There is a waiting list for this thing they're calling Meal with a Mentor. There is a waiting list. Kids want to sit down and have a meal with somebody a little bit older than them or a lot older than them. Why is there a waiting list? Because some people are there just an hour a week, and they're building relationships. Kids want to hang out with them. People come in and say, I can do this one time every once in a while. Kids don't trust them yet. They don't want to meet with them. But man, as soon as they believe that you are there, they are lining up because they need an adult to talk to. You could give a Saturday away. I need to do this in my neighborhood. I need to be... You could say, hey, I got 6 hours next Saturday. Can I help you with something? I mean, this could just go forever. What context can you view this idea of living sacrificially in? Are you married? In what way could you live sacrificially within the context of your marriage in the next couple months? Do you have kids? Are you a parent? How could you live sacrificially as a parent in the next couple months? Are you a neighbor? Are you a coworker? Are you a business owner? Following Jesus in these confusing times. I don't even know how to be a neighbor right now. Am I supposed to say anything or not? I don't even know how to be a coworker. Life's so confusing. I'm not even sure what I should do as a business owner right now. It's just everything's so weird right now. Here's something. Live sacrificially. That's the way. Okay? Live sacrificially. Here's a clarifying word for us. Sacrifice. Okay? In view of God's mercy. Sacrifice. Amen? God help us.